Hey friends, this is Fun Therapy, and my name is Mike Foster. And together we're going to dive into the messy and brutal and those not so perfect parts of our story. We're going to do it with a smile. Around here, we leverage the pain. We forge meaning into the messiness of life. We believe our setbacks can become our superpowers. And we don't need to hide our scars or our struggles because they bring us a beautiful gift of insight and wisdom. Or as poet and novelist Louise May Alcott once wrote, she said that I am not afraid of the storms, for I'm learning how to sail my ship. My name is Mike Foster, and this is Fun Therapy. So as we near the end of this season of Fun Therapy, I just want to say thanks for being such a great friend to this podcast, for supporting it, for sharing it with your friends, and for all the kind words and encouragement you've sent me. It's been so fun hearing from you and getting to know your stories and hearing about how the conversations we're having here have really impacted you. It's been awesome. In the next week's final episode of the season, I know season one, it's coming to a close. I'm going to talk about what the future holds for Fun Therapy and where we go from here. But in the meantime, I really can't stress enough how important taking a moment right now to leave a review, you know, hitting those stars on your app or in the iTunes player, or actually writing a few sentences about what you've enjoyed about Fun Therapy. This will really help, and will really help me and the podcast. And if you haven't subscribed, well, this is also the time to do that. You say, what's the big deal? Here's why it's a big deal. These seemingly minor things are really, really important for the future of the Fun Therapy podcast. And it's going great. It's been a fantastic run so far. But especially as we come to the end of season one, I really encourage you to rate it, review it, and subscribe. Thanks in advance. In this session, I talk with my friend Lauren Findell. In February, Lauren was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. She was 31 years old, with 3 young kids and a family, and now facing an epic battle for her life. Her particular form of cancer was incredibly aggressive, which took her on a journey of pain, questions, and discovering what truly mattered in life. In this session, Lauren and I talk about how cancer changed her and how she had to fight for joy in the midst of deep physical and emotional suffering. And now this session of Fun Therapy with my friend Lauren. Today is kind of an important day for you. Tell me why.
Today is my last day of radiation. This will be my 30th radiation treatment. I've been going 5 days a week for 6 weeks, so it's been almost kind of like a part-time job. It's kept me away from my little kiddos and made me really tired and uncomfortable, so I'm really excited to be done with it.
What's been the hardest part about the radiation and the chemo?
I realize they both are their own kind of hard. You know, I got done with chemo, which is like nothing you can imagine until you're in it, you know, how it beats you up physically and mentally. I got done with chemo and I thought, oh, I can do radiation. You know, this is going to be easy compared to chemo. And I realized, like I said, it's its own kind of hard. You know, it was easy in the beginning. And then your skin starts to become really irritated and you're in pain and you're fatigued. And anytime I go through something hard physically, when I've gone through something hard physically in treatment, it's really affected me mentally. You know, when it's not as bad physically, I feel like I'm stronger and more hopeful. And then as it gets harder physically, where I'm more bedbound or not able to do the things I usually do, I can kind of get into a dark place. And that's been a battle. But
so tell me about what happens in that dark place. Like, where does your mind and thoughts take you?
Yeah. When I get to that dark place, the struggle, of course, has been fear of the future. You know, fear of recurrence. Is the cancer going to come back? Is it going to take my life next time? Can I do it again if it comes back? You know, I am only 32. I was 31 when I was diagnosed. So for me, I'm like, 10 more years even is not enough. I'm only going to be 42. You know, my kids will still be young. They'll still be little. So that is hard for me and hard for me to grasp and hard for me to think about in those moments. So
what's the scariest part of that for you?
The thought of not being able to raise my kids and grow old with my husband. I think that's something when you are diagnosed with a life-threatening disease, it kind of opens your eyes. You know, before I was like this young, busy mom, just kind of trying to power through and almost taking for granted each day, like the little things, making lunch and taking my kids to the park and getting my daughter ready for school and dropping her off and picking her up, because there's so many moments in treatment where that's stripped away from me, you know, or even my husband, like my eyes just were opened and I realized how badly I want to spend the rest of my life with him and travel with him and do fun things with him and raise our kids together. And so that's the scariest part, you know. Him and I had both come from broken homes, you know, and divorce, and we got married and are fully committed to staying married and raising our kids together and not allowing them to have a broken home. And then you realized, wow, that it might not be because of divorce. It could be because mom, you know, gets sick and mom ends up passing away early. So that's the scariest part for me is, you know, not being able to finish my job as mom and raising my kids and growing old with my husband.
Yeah, that's clearly the thing that I would imagine your relationship with your kids and your relationship with your husband has changed. Mm-hmm. Like there's kind of pre-cancer Lauren mm-hmm. and then post-cancer Lauren. Like what have you come to know about those relationships?
Oh, I've realized how much they mean to me. And I've also realized I need to not sweat the small stuff. You know, like I would get like little things, let's say like a fight with my husband, where I could let that go for a few days or let something little bother me, you know, like not taking the trash out or whatever. And not to say it doesn't, but I don't let it stew as long or fester as long. And for my kids, it's just, I think almost, you know, I'm trying to slow down and appreciate, like I mentioned earlier, the small stuff. Appreciate the small stuff. You're almost in fast forward, and now I'm just trying to slow. When I read that story at nap time to my 3-year-old, you know, I really look into his eyes and look at how blue they are and how beautiful they are, where I feel like before I was just reading and trying to get nap time going so I can get my break. So I'm just really trying to savor all the small moments and not take anything for granted. So that's what's kind of changed in my relationship with them.
Sorry. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. No, what have you learned about yourself?
I have learned I'm a lot stronger than I thought I was, that I can endure a lot more than I thought I could. I think this whole process has made me almost have to try to figure out like what my identity is. You know, before I put so much into like, oh, I'm a mom, I'm a wife. And then you get sick and you can't get out of bed because you are in the thick of chemo. And I kind of went through an identity crisis because I couldn't get up and do all of the things I used to do, or make that lunch or make dinner or even take care of myself. So I kind of went through an identity crisis. And then as I got further along in chemo, even in treatment, I started to label myself as like cancer patient. You know, it was kind of funny. Not too long ago, I went to a friend's birthday party, 40th birthday party. And after the party, my girlfriend who hosted it was driving me to radiation. And she's like, oh, I wanted to tell you that my brother-in-law came up to me and asked, who's the girl with the shaved head? And I didn't see a wedding ring on her finger. can I, you know, hit on her? And she's like, no, she's married. She's like, I just wanted to tell you that. And it's funny, it kind of like brought me, it made me excited. And not that I want to like be hit on by another married man, but I think when I was walking in a room, I was still looking at myself as a cancer patient. You know what I mean? And the sickly person. And it opened my eyes that that's not what people view me as.
What happens when we come to the stark reality that we are not promised tomorrow? Having to face our own mortality and the reality that life is so, so short and every day is precious. I wonder how you and I would live if this truth was front and center in our stories right now, like it is in Lauren's. What would truly matter to you? What relationships would you invest in? What grudges would you let go? How would you spend your time if all of a sudden you realize you didn't have much of it? I love Lauren's wisdom as someone who understands the fragility of life. She reminds us to slow down and to see life's little small moments and not take anything for granted. The cancer identity that you felt was maybe causing this crisis, like, am I my disease? Am I, you know, am I a different person? What was the thing that you did not like about that identity?
There was a couple things. One thing is my age. It felt so awkward to me to be, you know, at my daughter's kindergarten graduation with a four-year-old and a toddler on my lap. And I just felt out of place. Like, it wasn't supposed to be me at 31 and then, you know, turning 32. I just would look around and kind of be like, this should be me in, like, you know, when I'm 55 or 65. It should not be me in my 30s, you know, with three small kids. So I had a hard time with that, even just being a young mom. Like, you know, I'd look around the park and be like, I should be having another kid. If even I shouldn't be going through cancer treatment or have this head wrap on or have barely any eyebrows or eyelashes, you know? So that part was hard. Just kind of feeling like it wasn't my time. It wasn't supposed to be happening right now.
Did you feel like it was unfair?
In some ways, yeah, I had my moments, you know, where when I was in the thick of chemo and treatment, where I remember even just being on Facebook and looking at my friends that are, you know, in my same stage of life or age group, and or even just driving up the street, seeing gals out like walking and working out and feeling like that's unfair. You know, I should be out exercising or being able to run or being able to go on that vacation or, you know, doing that special outing with my kid, and I can't. I'm in bed, or I have to go get my next infusion treatment for chemo. So in some ways, yeah, I felt like it was unfair. I never kind of felt like, why me? It was more like, why now, you know?
Was there anger?
I had my moments. Yeah, I had my moments where I felt angry, more just frustrated that I couldn't be doing what I wanted to do, you know?
Who were you angry at?
Cancer. I wasn't angry at God, You know, I wasn't angry. I was angry at cancer. I had my moments where I was angry at myself, you know, where I thought about my life. I don't have genetic, my cancer isn't from genetics. It's deemed to be environmentally caused. So I had my moments where I felt angry at myself for not treating my body better. You know, things in my youth that I did where I wasn't thinking about, hey, in 20 years, this could possibly give you cancer.
Could you blame yourself?
A little bit. Yeah, I blamed. I had my moments where when I found out that it was environmentally caused, I had my moments where I blamed myself, that I kind of almost got mad at my parents. Like, why didn't you stop me from doing this or that?
What were you doing environmentally that you felt responsible for, you think could have changed that?
I went to a place where, you know, I thought about my youth and I had a really destructive period where things weren't going well at home and I was drinking and I was smoking and experimenting with drugs and had a very destructive time. And, you know, I don't know if that caused my cancer, but when you find out that it's not genetic, you start to, you know, look at everything in your life. Not even just my youth, but I even like as a young mom where I was, had all these young kids and I'm making them dino nuggets and I'm not taking time to like make myself something to eat. And I'm eating like the scraps of dino nuggets off their plate and I'm not sitting down and having a green salad or making sure I'm working out and taking care of myself. So I just was looking at my whole life and it was a bad, it wasn't a good thing. You know, I was kind of beating myself up, but thinking, what did I do to cause this? You know, or should I have gone in to see the doctor sooner and that kind of thing.
So there was anger at cancer, but there was anger projected at you.
Yes. Yes. There was, and in my whole journey, that wasn't the whole time, but especially when I found out that it wasn't genetic. I went through this kind of week of battling that and mentally going through that process.
How did you come to be at peace with that?
Honestly, for me, it was right around Easter. And I'm a believer and I went to the Easter service. And I saw, like, you know, Jesus on the cross. And I believe I've been forgiven for my sins. And I went to that place where I'm like, I just realized I don't need to go back into the past. That's done. All I can do is look forward. I have been forgiven for that. But I need to look forward. I can't look back. That happened. There's nothing I can do about it now. There's nothing I can change about what I did in the past. I didn't go in to the doctor sooner. I went in when I went. And all I can do now is move forward and make healthy decisions now for my life, healthy decisions for my kids, and, you know, move forward. So
what's been the most surprising thing about this journey for you?
The most surprising thing has been, for me, the joy that I've, even in like the thick of this trial, that I've been able to experience and that my family has been able to experience. I was surprised by how great my friends were too, and my community was, and how they literally, you know, during the times where I needed to be lifted up, they lifted me up. You know, how they came in and helped our family and fed us and made sure, you know, my house was clean and took so much off of my plate so I wouldn't have to worry about that. And I could worry, or not worry, but focus on just getting better. So that was a surprise. And my friends were able to bring me so much joy. They did so many cool things, like first day of chemo, like just, you know, my chemo loot and my chemo bags and things to just make me feel comfortable before my mastectomy. They threw me a boob voyage. and took me to a day spa with all these other ladies, and we had our trucker hats on that said Boob Voyage. And, you know, I'm about to have this very serious surgery, basically, you know, be amputated. And we had so much fun, and we're doing water aerobics, and gals are staring at our hats and, you know, what's a Boob Voyage? And we explain it, and we're with a smile on our face, and we were still able to have a lot of fun, and it made the process easier for me. So
it's so surprising. That is surprising to hear the joy in this. What's and I see it in you too. That's what's so, like, it's not just a thing because you feel like you have to find joy and you got to fight for joy. And I think you do have to fight for joy. Mm. You do have to fight for joy. But you're experiencing that in this very difficult season. I think that it, I think anybody listening to this would go, really? Mm. Or were you, I mean, clearly, what do you think in terms of your, was that just a decision? Because you could have gone lots of different directions with this.
Yeah. Yes, it was a decision. When I first found out, when I was first diagnosed, it makes me even just emotional to think about, because it's paralyzing. You know, you're paralyzed in fear and of the unknown. And like I said, looking at my kids and not knowing, you know, what my future was going to be or how long I'd be around with them. And I realized you can either be really mad and angry and get through treatment and go to a dark place, and or you can decide that I'm going to find the joy and I'm not going to allow this. I'm going to make the most of my time here. You know what I mean? I don't know how many days I have or, you know, how long I'm going to be here, but I don't want my kid's memory or my husband's memory to be like, you know, she was just walking around depressed and angry and this and that. Don't get me wrong. I had my days, but I was not going to let that be the majority of my days. And I was not going to live in fear. I was not going to live in worry or with a dark cloud around me. So yes, I made the decision. I'm going to find the joy, and I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to have a smile on my face. And I've managed to do that.
I love how Lauren, in the midst of her pain, she chose joy. She found a way to smile. She learned about how deeply loved she was, and she just determined to make the most of whatever it is, not live in fear and not live in worry, to have fun and to have a smile. And that, my friends, as you know, is not easy to do. But when you fight for joy, it's one of the most important battles that you can wage. And I'm not sure what battle you might be in right now or how defeated you might feel, but maybe you've been sucker punched in your story, and maybe there's a health issue that feels hopeless, or maybe your dreams are dying, or maybe you just can't muster enough strength today to keep up the good fight. Just know that in these moments, we are with you and that you are not alone, and that joy is still possible, but you have to fight for it. As you think about just the past year, what was the worst day?
There were a couple bad days. But the worst day was the day I went in for the ultrasound. And, you know, I had gone into the doctor and got it checked, the lump checked, and she's told me, oh, it's probably just a cyst. Don't worry, but we've got to get an ultrasound. And in my gut, I was starting to know, like, be prepared and know that it was probably cancer. But you're still hopeful. And, you know, thinking for the best. And I lay down on that table. And at first, the gal and I are joking. And then all of a sudden, she's doing the ultrasound, and it got really quiet. And it got really dark in that room. And I could even just get a sense from her that it was something serious. And I'm laying there and starting to just get paralyzed with fear and thinking of my kiddos and my family and thinking this should not be me. I should not be on this table, wanting to just literally run out of the room. Like, I should be at home reading stories to my kids and building Legos and that kind of thing. And anyways, quickly goes from the ultrasound, the doctor came in and he says, you have a very suspicious mass. And I was tearful and I said, it's really big, huh? And he said, it is. And he basically had tears in his eyes. That was hard. And it quickly went from an ultrasound to a mammogram to him coming in and telling me the same thing and saying, you need to get a biopsy. And I said, are we doing that today? And he's like, no, probably next week. And I just broke down and I said, I know that this is big and it's growing fast. And I reminded him of, I said, I've got three little kids I'm fighting for. Please help me. And he was like, okay, I'm going to get you in and we're going to do a biopsy today. But when I left there, without even having the official results, he said, this is most likely malignant. And I left there knowing like I had cancer. And so that was one of the hardest days, is just wrapping my head around that. And then having to go from that appointment to like walking into my home, to my kids being there and wanting to put their arms around me and just talk to me about their day. And I, you know, I'm frozen and knowing what I knew. So that was probably the toughest day, even tougher than when I got the call to tell me what it was. And that's its own hard. But yeah, that was the toughest day for me.
How did you tell your kids? What did you tell them?
I got a book about mommy's polka dot. And we sat down and we read that book. It explained that, you know, mommy's got a polka dot in her breast. Because at the time, my kids were, my youngest was 2, my middle son was 3, almost 4, and my daughter was, had just turned 6. So they were little. So we sat down and read that book to explain to them. And, you know, I showed them what side my polka dot was on. And they handled it well. But when it got to the part where mommy was going to lose her hair, my daughter, my 6-year-old, she had, that's where she lost it. She's like, wait, you're going to lose your hair? I think realizing like mom's going to look sick for a little bit and mom's going to look different. So that's kind of how we talked to them about it, is we used this awesome book and sat in bed and cuddled up and shared it with them that way.
What about your husband? Was he in the room with you when you were getting, or when you were on the table?
Oh, yes. So for my husband, you know, he, of course, has always been the less worried of the two of us. He doesn't worry as much, doesn't stress as much. He's kind of easygoing. And when he was in the room, it's kind of funny. He's even on his phone at first. And it was kind of like he looked up from his phone and he could feel the heaviness in the room. And just even with the tech who is spending a lot of time, you know, on my breast, a lot of time looking at that lump. And I could kind of see his face change, like, you know, and go from a place like, because the whole time he's like, babe, it's probably not going to be anything. You're going to be fine, but let's get it checked out. And so I kind of saw the switch on his face from it going from kind of like light and worry-free to like, oh, this is serious. This is going to be hard. And he had a lot of moments where I'm just freaking out and he was trying to speak truth and encouragement to me. But I know for him, he had his moments too, where he had to like just go and be alone and cry and, you know, have his moment of weakness when he's trying to be strong for me, you know, in person. And sometimes that happened when we were together too, and that needed to happen. But
Did you feel like through this experience, like you had to, that there were days where like you had to be, you felt the pressure to be strong for your kids and for your husband and to like put on a strong face?
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's, especially with my kids, with my husband, I am real and I showed it. And, but for my kids, yes, I did not want to ignite fear or an anxiety in them. So there were days I had to really just hold back the tears and put on a brave face and just try to be strong, you know? I had three little kids. Like, there's moments I felt like crap, but I still had to change a poopy diaper or break up a fight, you know, or clean up a mess or a spill. So yeah, I had to just be strong and be brave and their life, you know, still do. They know mom's sick, but it's not going to stop them from being little kids or thinking about, you know, their little world. So yeah.
So tell me about, you had a double mastectomy. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that day and the surgery and just your relationship with your body now.
Yeah, yeah.
What is that like?
Oh, so for me, when you have that surgery, it's hard. Like going into it, I would be come out of the shower and look at the mirror and know like my body is about to drastically change. It already had changed a lot. I had lost a lot of weight from chemo and just, you know, I looked in the mirror and around that time, especially because I got done with chemo. So I have lost a lot of hair. My eyebrows have thinned, my eyelashes have thinned. You look more sick. You look more sickly, you know? And so I was already kind of struggling with that a little bit. But then there's an excitement to get this surgery done because it feels like you're doing one more thing to get rid of the cancer and to help prevent it. So there's an excitement and a little bit of anxiety that goes into it too. So I got done and, you know, for me, I had my moments where, you know, it was hard, but for the most part, I was like, this is just the new me. This is what I look like. I'm still a woman. I can still be beautiful. It's not all about the outside. It's who I am on the inside. And, you know, even now I've started to go to the gym again and I thought, should I change in here? Am I going to freak women out? But I'm like, no, people need to see this in a way. Like, this is what, not all of our bodies are the same. Some of us have gone through cancer. Some of us, you know, there's gals out there getting mastectomies just to, because they've got the gene and they want to try to prevent it. So I'm like, this is just me. This is the new normal and you get used to it. I don't know if I can say this on here, but like, I don't have nipples. And I was like, so scared to, you know, get rid of, to not have my nipples. Like I thought that was for me, identified me as a woman, you know, but you surprisingly get used to it. You're like, this is just my new body.
So often we enter into what I call a survival season. How do we survive? How do we get through? Well, if the ship is taking on water, you only do one thing. You look for the life preserver. Life must become laser focused on the simple task of living. Too many of us make the mistake of diluting our chances at survival with just unnecessary things. We try to do too much. Our expectations are too high. When life requires all the resources for survival, you must say yes to the things that will help you survive and no to the things that don't really matter or are simply not mission critical. Perhaps right now you're in a chapter in your story where the only goal is about surviving. And that's okay. Let that be the project for this season. getting through the day is a massive win. Give yourself permission just to do small things. Today, I will breathe. Today, I will get out of bed. Today, I will dress myself. I will eat breakfast. These, my friends, are victories when you're in survival seasons. And so, my friend, honor wherever you're at right now. Welcome it. And know that doing small things, just finding the life preserver each day, is enough. Realize that life offers multiple seasons for us. There's survival season, there's a harvesting season, a growing season, a waiting season. Each of them incredibly important to our growth. Each of them has unique elements and learnings and goals and discoveries attached to them.
Our bodies are so intertwined with our identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so often, just in general, without going through what you've gone through, you know, losing your hair, the surgery, all, like, there's just, we're always sort of at war, this insecurity with, yeah, with the container of our self, right?
Mm-hmm. Just,
and yet it really feels like you've been, there's sort of this liberation or freedom, mm-hmm, that you have by going, like literally going through, you know, not like looking in the mirror, not even recognizing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel more free? Do you feel like, what is the, there are things that you, before cancer, you maybe felt insecure about that now you don't?
Yeah. You know, I think when you realize, I mean, all of our days are numbered, but when you go through this and you realize they are, and kind of like I've talked about, you don't sweat the small stuff. You know what I mean? Whereas before I cared, like, oh my gosh, I have that dark spot on my face, or I have this or that. I'm like, it doesn't matter, you know? So yes, I have kind of had a release and some freedom where I just don't have to care as much. I don't have a choice. I have to have a pixie cut right now. Like, my hair is growing, you know, I was bald and it's growing in, but in this, I'm just looking at the positive, like, hey, I've kind of always wanted to do that, but I was too scared. And I get to have this haircut where I don't really have to do my hair, you know? So I've just tried to embrace it. And in some ways, I'm glad my kids are growing up and getting to see me go through this stage. Because I'm hoping that, you know, when my boys go to find their wife or a girlfriend or whatever, they are going to have grown up with a mom who's gone through lots of different stages and looked lots of different ways. And I hope that they see my inner beauty and that that's what they look for in a woman. For my daughter, you know, same thing. I'm glad she's getting to see this and see that the physical stuff just doesn't matter that much. You know, it matters who you are on the inside.
What's the biggest question that you have? If you could have it answered right now, what would that question be?
I would want to know, I guess, how much time I have left here. I think I'd want to know that. But on the other hand, I know if I knew that, it might make me focus more on that instead of enjoying my time here with my kids. But that's probably the biggest thing, is I just, the unknown of the future and not knowing how long, who knows? I mean, I could never have cancer again and be here for years and years, or it could come back and I could be gone in 5 years. So that would probably be the question I would want to know.
How often do you think about that?
It's been such a roller coaster these last 9 months of treatment that I can go weeks when I'm starting to physically feel better and not think about it at all. And then I can have a week where I think about it every day, you know, if I'm physically not doing well. You know, when my side effects from radiation are kind of at their peak, I'm thinking a lot about that because I'm in pain and I'm being tortured, you know, going through the torture of treatment. all to just get rid of this cancer and hopefully not have it again. So for me, it's just, it depends. It's a roller coaster. Sometimes not at all. I think as I'm further removed from treatment, I'm more kind of getting to jump in back into normal life, I don't think I'm going to think about it a lot or fester on it, because I just, what's the point, you know? But right now in the thick of treatment, it's kind of just on and off.
So as you think about your future, mm-hmm. what's the thing that you're most excited about or energized by, knowing what you've been through?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I am excited to just get to take care of my kids again and be mom. I'm excited to do stuff with my husband, like go on dates and make sure we go on that vacation and you know, just him and I. I'm excited about being able to help others, help other women or even men who are going through cancer. I've been running this marathon and I'm towards the end. I've got the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm kind of finishing up the worst part of treatment, or my last worst part. And I look back at who I was when I first found out, and like I said, how I've been paralyzed in fear, or I was paralyzed in fear and so scared. And I can't wait to be that voice for somebody that says, you know, this is hard, but you are going to get through it and you're going to be okay. And I just can't wait to be that encouragement for others and to just kind of help calm them when they're in that storm, because it gets better. It gets easier, you know.
So maybe you have a friend who has been diagnosed with cancer. And maybe you feel stuck in terms of what to do and how you can help. Sometimes we feel afraid when our loved ones or our neighbors or friends are struggling through a really tough diagnosis. So let me share just a couple things of what not to say and maybe a couple things of what to do. So for example, don't use phrases like, "I know just how you feel," or "I'm sure you'll be fine," or "don't worry." As a friend, you don't have to try to silver line the seriousness of the situation. In fact, silver lining things is generally not a good idea. It's important to treat people with the same sort of respect and dignity you normally would. Check in with them. Don't be afraid to make plans for the future. Always honor them by asking permission before visiting, and be very clear that it's perfectly okay to say no. What should we do? What kind of activities are helpful? You know, shop for groceries, help with the chores, babysit the kids, go for a walk, or schedule a movie night out. But most importantly, don't run away. Don't go quiet. We need each other in our seasons of suffering.
What would you say to yourself when you're laying on that table on your worst day? Like, what did you need to hear or have happen?
I needed to be held. I needed to be told that I'm strong enough to get through it, that it is going to be hard. It's not going to be easy, but I can do it. And I'm gonna come out stronger and with more perspective and actually live the rest of my life better than I would have before. That in some ways, cancer is a gift. That I'm gonna be able to love greater because of it. Not only my family, but that I'm going to be able to love and pastor people better, because now I really know. I didn't know what it was like to lay on that table and be told I have cancer. I didn't know, you know, I would sympathize for people who had been diagnosed. I had sympathized for people who had, you know, been diagnosed with cancer or some other horrible disease or, you know, had some kind of tragedy, but I hadn't really experienced a tragedy or a bad diagnosis. And going through that, I can hug somebody so much deeper and harder, and love them so much greater than I could before. In some ways, I'm so glad I've experienced that, because now I understand. I know what they've gone through. And I'm thankful that I can do that for people now. So I would have told myself on that table, like, God's going to use this, and you are going to be better because of it. You know, my family is healthier now because I have been diagnosed. You know, I am healthier now because I've been diagnosed. I've changed what we eat and, you know, what I clean my house with, and so many little things that I wouldn't have done. I would have told myself, your eyes are about to be opened, and they're going to be open for the good. So.
Yes, you mentioned about strength and finding strength, mm-hmm. and telling yourself that you're strong. Did you think you weren't?
It's not that I didn't think I was strong, you know? I was very run down at the time when I got diagnosed. I was just run down with life and kids and feeling like I was barely keeping my head above the water. I think I was kind of just barely trying to survive, you know, without cancer. And then I was diagnosed, and it kind of made me realize who I was and that I can have cancer and I can still be a good mom. I can still be a good wife. I can be a good friend. I can get through the physical, you know, it's so hard on you physically. You are just, your butt is kicked. You are dropped to your lowest point. You know, there were so many different sicknesses and things I got during chemo, but I would be in bed sick for a week and a half, and then I would get up and I would go out and walk. I would go to the gym and work out with a friend who's a trainer. And that made me feel so good, you know, whereas I could have been just this, you know, sick in bed, but I'm like, no, I'm strong. I'm going to keep building muscle even, you know, while I'm going through chemo. And the fact that I did that, it made me realize that mentally and physically I'm strong. Mentally strong, the battle of darkness that comes in with illness, you know, the thoughts of death or just negative thoughts or fear, you know, not feeling enough when you can't get up and do what you usually did. I had to really battle that spiritually. And I was looking over my journal last night and I realized I had so many victories, you know what I mean? Where I didn't let those dark thoughts win or depression win. So yeah, I realized how strong I was mentally and physically.
So who is Lauren now?
Lauren is a survivor. That word, I had heard it, you know, you see it during October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and all of that. But I did not realize the weight in that word and that title. You literally feel like you have survived a war on your body, a war on your mind, and I've survived it. Illness can... it can easily destroy relationships. It was hard. This was hard on my marriage. But we didn't allow it to. We didn't allow it to destroy our marriage. It didn't destroy my relationship with my kids. I was able to survive and get through the toughest moments. So I am now a survivor where I wasn't before. And I'm proud to say that I am. But I'm a mom still. I'm a friend. I'm a wife. I'm a leader. And I love life so much more than I did. I love people so much more than I did. I love my God so much more than I did.
Thank you, Lauren, for being a fighter. You are strong and inspiring, and your story is just a great light in a lot of people's darkness, and thanks for sharing. And I don't know what battle you're fighting right now, my friends, but I hope this session with Lauren reminds you to keep going and to keep fighting through whatever storm you're facing. And through all of it, we can choose joy. If you want to connect with Lauren, I encourage you to do that on her Facebook page, just Lauren Findell. She shares a lot of photos and really documents her journey over the past few months as she's battled cancer. It is a great way to connect with her and hear more about her story and really her present day situation. Also, her and her husband are starting a church here in the Southern California area, actually San Diego area, my hometown. It's called Anthem Church, but you can check out their website at myanthemchurch.com. So friends, I also want to remind you about my workshop here also in San Diego called Rescue Academy. Good things happening in San Diego, which is awesome. It's a two-day workshop. I'd love for you to join us if you're interested in learning to be a better heart handler and be an active listener and lead with empathy in your relationships. RescueAcademy.com to register, RescueAcademy.com. And yes, it will sell out. So if you want to come, go there now. And then also make sure to leave a review about this podcast. If you have enjoyed what Lauren has shared, I'd love for you to leave comments and also share on your interwebs and social media platforms. Share with some friends about how this has impacted you. That really helps the podcast. And make sure to subscribe and do all that fun stuff over there in iTunes. Hit those stars, people. Also, I want to thank my friend Ryan, Sleep In At Last, for just providing the beautiful background. Really, he's a co-creator with this podcast, with this just the beautiful music that he creates. sleepinatlast.com for more information on Ryan or to buy his music. He's got some really great stuff. Fun Therapy is a proud member of the Relevant Podcast Network, and for more shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, make sure to check out relevantmagazine.com/podcasts. And if you'd like to connect with me, I would like to connect with you. Instagram is the best way to do that. I love Instagram. I love posting things on Instagram. I love connecting with people on Instagram. And my Instagram account is MikeFoster2000, 2000 after my name. And you can also hop on over to my website at MikeFoster.tv or SecondChance.org. And again, thanks for listening, for being such an important part of this Fun Therapy family. You matter. Your story matters. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're listening. And just remember that no matter what has happened in your story, that your setbacks can become your superpowers, and honesty is always the best policy. I'm Mike Foster, and we'll see you next time on the Fun Therapy Podcast.